the track. The next mile, the brave side to the blind man. It's down to the left child. We will survive in this country wilderness. Swimming through the waters of Babylon like a rebel fish. Jungleist, specialist, critical and survivalist. Spitting heaven's fire from his lips. Burn the slave driver.
Welcome, listeners, to time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all that getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforanawakening.com, which is home base, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. They broadcast out of the Black Belt and catch the live stream there also. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for an Awakening media is there also. Always full of the latest podcast of the various programs on Time for an Awakening. And interesting articles that you can read, download at a later time, or even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening media. Tonight, a special guest is joining us, and an activist here that myself and Brother Richard are always familiar with, lives in the city of Philadelphia, activist and organizer and Northeast representative of NCOBRA, Brother Ari Meredizan, will be with us this evening to talk about the subject of reparations and some of his work that he's been dealing with on this front for a number of years. We'll get started with our conversation with Brother Ari after we come back from this brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Not a Wu-Tang-a. All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum. Here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street, Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. Elliot, you know, I mentioned I'm testing out a new mic, so I'm hoping it comes across a little clear. But I'm definitely looking forward to our discussion tonight.
Yeah, you know, this is the continuance or expanding of the talk. I mean, we've been doing this for a number of years when we were on terrestrial radio in Philadelphia. Brother Ari had joined us on the program, and he was instrumental at that time of getting Dr. Winbush to come on, and Joy DeGruy. So Brother Ari has always been a resource to us here. You know, I've always observed his work, you know, for the time that I've knew him here in Philadelphia, and he's always been active and an organizer. So we're glad to have him with us this evening on Time for an Awakening. Brother Ari, are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm here, Brother Elliot, Brother Richard. Thanks for inviting me.
How are you, sir?
I'm super fantastic up here in Princeton. I anticipated being at home when it's called, by the time he's called, but, you know, as things would happen, I'm here and ready to go still.
You're in Princeton. I guess you're active doing something, Brother Ari. You know, some of you men.
Say that again?
Listen, you're in Princeton, so I know you're active doing something. I know this.
Oh, yeah.
I know. Listen, some of you men I have the utmost respect for that are activists for the community and that are really out there, because I don't understand how you have time even for yourself. You're always busy. You're always working in the community and for the community and for our people. So before we start this conversation, I just want to give hats off to you and my thanks for what you do.
Thank you, soldier. Appreciate that, man. You know what? I mean, it's, you know, you're really manifesting or exampling a major issue for us. We always have to acknowledge each other, appreciate each other, and respect each other once we see who we are in our community, right? And so you're doing the fundamental task, man, because that goes a long way, one, for the individual that you're acknowledging, as well as the acknowledger, because then you're expanding the relationship, you establish a relationship. So that's key. I like to demystify stuff. So pardon me, but I like to demystify stuff because we want to make it simple. The situation is very simple based on what happened to us, you know?
I agree, Brother Ari. Before we get started with the conversation this evening, which will be centering around reparations, Brother Ari, go back a little bit. Because as far as I know, you're still the Northeast representative of NCORA.
Well, right now, I'm a former national co-chair,
okay,
former Northeast regional representative, and currently I am the co-chair, the male co-chair of the Philadelphia chapter.
Okay.
All that may change in June once we have our 2019 convention in Detroit.
Talk about your activities centering around reparations in particular. We'll probably get a chance to talk about some of your other activities, but let's talk about reparations and your involvement with NCORA, which has been a number of years now. Tell the listening audience why you felt it necessary to really get involved as a working member, not just somebody that says I'm in NCORA. You're a working member. Talk about the origin of what made you get involved as a working member.
Well, what made me a working member is my inherent understanding of what happened to us, to our ancestors, therefore what happened to us as descendants. You know, just like being a family member. I'm from a family of 10 boys and 2 girls, right? And I'm the 7th son. And so I always was able to make a connection with the brothers above me. I only had one brother that's below me, right? And so anytime something happened to one of us, it happened to all of us. And everybody knew that in the neighborhood. And that also applied to not only the Kirkland family, which is my family name, but it also happened to all the other families that were in there, the Phillips family, the Smith family, the Clemens family, right? We all had stair-step boys in that community in 15th East Capitol. And we all interacted with each other. So, and therefore, as I said, that anything that happened to me within my family, in terms of my family, everybody responds. Anything happened to all those families that I named, we all respond. You see, you couldn't come in down around 15th East Capitol and mess around with folks, do whatever you want to do with them and injure them and think you're going to get away. You know, so that was that inherent raising of me by my family, my brothers. And so I applied that when I look at what happened to our ancestors, man. That's family. So you got to take the same approach to dealing with our enslavement or what happened to us that you would take current day contemporary with your family members. If somebody come after your family member, do something to your mother or your brother, you know, they're going to have to pay the price, whatever that may be. But you're not going to just let them get away. We're not going to walk away and turn your head as if it didn't happen. I don't do that. It's just simple as that. So it's very innate and inherent within me to respond to what happened to the crisis, the crime against our humanity of our people. Anybody commit a crime against my family? You know, they got to deal with it. I'm going to raise up my sister right now, my youngest sister. Man, this sister of mine, she was the family. She was the keeper of the family name. Didn't know go there. Her and my father. And she takes that off my father. I mean, it was two fighting son of a gun, you know.
Okay.
They were fighting at the drop of a dime. You couldn't mess with them. You couldn't mess with the family. On the street, on the job, anywhere. So I was raised like that, man. And then, you know, I've been in the war. I've been in prison. So that same approach. You always deal with your current, deal with, you protect yourself. And you begin to make sure that you function in an integrity, make sure your integrity and your dignity is intact. Wherever your feet are and wherever you lay your head. That's just basic fundamental stuff to me. And so that's what drove me to be involved with Encumbra. Now, in 1988, I was living in Little Rock, Arkansas. I had my two babies at the time. They're all adults now, 33, 30, 34, 35. And I was taking them back home to their mommy in Philadelphia, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kept them during the summer. My son always stayed with me in Little Rock. I was taking both of them back over. It's his time to go back home with the daughter to their mother. And on the way back in 88, we went to the inaugural conference of Encobra. And we signed up. You see?
Okay.
And from that point on, now I subsequently went back to Little Rock. But I came back to Philadelphia in 2005. And the first thing I called a couple of folks of reparations there. And I said, man, y'all know do you anyone here know who's dealing with reparations in the Philadelphia area? Because what prompted me to ask that question in my readjustment to back to Philadelphia was this whole thing about Wachovia. They was coming out spinning and trying to tell us, that is our people, that they weren't going to pay reparations because of their enslaving history. Right, they participated, they made loans to, or they participated in, they set up businesses, the mercantilists, all that type of stuff, in the name at that time of the Bank of North America, right? And so I did my research, I said, I got to fight this thing, where are the folks? And so I called my partner in Manchester, New Hampshire, Willard Lett. He's currently the Northeast Regional Representative now. And he said, man, there's a brother by the name of Corbett Banks there. He's involved. So I called Corbett. And Corbett also went to the same graduate school that both Willie and I went to. So we all was in the network together. He said, yeah, brother, I read Corbett chapter meets every Tuesday at UNIAGA 6:30. And so when I went in and connected with them, I was already on fire, man. I came in like, I'm like this, man. Well, about 2 feet planted. It's not like, oh, you the last one came in, therefore you got to sit and do what you sit and wait, look what everybody else doing. I came in with the energy I had in me to fight and repair our people, so I came in that way.
Okay.
And so, and the chapter received me that way. And I've been rolling with this ever since. And now my focus is just on the how to make reparation happen. The question whether or not we are owed reparations, all that's not an issue for me no more. It shouldn't be an issue for nobody. The thing is, how do we make it happen? And so that's my concentration now. That's my emphasis. That's my internal dynamic of all the reparations in Cobra. And so that's what our folks are going to be hearing now, because all those reparations before us in Cobra, they made reparations over 31 years. They made reparations a household name.
Yes.
They helped set up we were initially involved in with structuring and constructing, but constructing and structuring H.R. 40 with John Conyers, Congressman John Conyers, back in 1889. You know, so we've been flowing from that point on. From that point on, and COBRA has always set up, always developed primarily first, the infrastructure, the coalition, the collaboration necessary for us to move forward from our different lanes on the highway. And I like to demystify this thing called reparations as well. And since I mentioned this thing called a highway, you know, you got to look at this reparation movement in America and our involvement individually, collectively, organizationally, as the reparation superhighway. And everyone who feels and knows that we've been injured must find a lane on that highway and bring something on it. Put a car on that highway. Meaning, make sure that you able, when you come on the highway, you got your passion with you. You got a particular aspect that you're gonna concentrate on. You see? And then once you're on the highway, everybody's rolling like we're supposed to be rolling. And then Cobra being the vanguard, all right, or the tragedy cop in that particular analogy, then that's what we do. That's what Cobra's all about. And that Cobra is just making sure we don't do any road rage with each other from the various between the various organizations, a reparations organization, make sure that we respect each other, follow all the traffic lights, yield when we have to yield, you know? And so it's that concept that we got to really understand, because that put everybody in motion. Nobody have an excuse if they call themselves reparationists. They have no excuse to argue with anybody that's already on the highway. Okay. If you can't find a lane, or you feel like your lane is the same as someone that's already in a lane on the highway, but join them. Collaborate with them. Don't go in fighting them. You know, you collaborate with them. If not, you create your own lane on the highway. And say, we drive this thing. And that's what it's going to take. And we must be clear about our destination. And our destination on the reparation superhighway is full repair. Full repair means that's what it says. That repairs fully, like as we once were, as best as can be done based on the time frame, the space and time of our history, and the facts and circumstances of our history. So there you go, man. I mean, that's the whole dynamic. That's a good concept that you can visualize and people can take hold to. And there's no reason for us to be at odds with each other, no matter, because no one owns this reparation movement. We are on it only on a collective basis. And we got to acknowledge each other, appreciate each other, and respect each other on this reparation superhighway. And because we got to keep our eye, as I like to say, we got to keep the locus of our focus on the enemy, on our enslavers. In this case, the descendant enslavers.
Okay.
And they are units of government. Right, and going all the way up to from your local community, Philadelphia, in this instance for me, be Philadelphia, the state of Pennsylvania, right, and the U.S. Congress, my U.S. Congress representative. And so then we're also dealing with the church, who has sanctioned this crime. All right, so we got to deal with them in Cobra, Northeast region. We had a session with the head of the Jesuits of the United States and Canada, in his office with his chief of staff. Now, we knew that in that 1 hour that he gave us that we couldn't solve the problem of reparations, so we don't go in like that. And we don't go in hooting and pooting about reparations. We go in there trying to negotiate a deal, negotiate something. We projected our outcome, and I think we projected the outcome, and we made that outcome happen. In that instance, for these churches, and it applies to everybody else too, particularly the colleges and universities, which they haven't yet named, but the colleges and universities too. But the church, we told this rascal, the Jesuits, head of the Jesuits, make sure you get the language right. Because in that meeting, he was referring to our answers as slaves. And we had to correct them. And we corrected them, no. Our answers were enslaved. You all enslaved us. You know, we had a great civilization. Greater than the one you're from. So don't call my family slaves, you know?
Okay.
Now, if you're going to call them anything, and we know that our family, our ancestors, was dispersed all over the world, right? So we're here in the United States, and so we told this rascal that we are, if anything, you call us what we are, what the facts and circumstances say that we are, or who we are. That's descendants of Africans enslaved in the United States. That's who we are, factually and circumstantially, right? Even if we cannot pinpoint the exact family lineage of everybody, we don't have to do that. And if we think that we have to do it, or we say that we have to do it, we got to make sure that the enslavers pay for that. So that's not even an issue. The issue is that we have to identify ourselves as the descendant of those enslaved, thereby identifying the group of people that we represent current day. We represent ourselves. I'm 72 years old. I was born into Jim Crow. You follow me? So I don't have to go back another century or two other centuries, you know, to understand what happened to us. And so that's, I want everybody to understand that. You know, if your mother's mother's mother, if you 60, if you 18 years old, then you got a connection. You should be able to see your responsibility to your family, to your mother's mother, and your mother's mother's mother, if you can go back that far. Same thing with your father's father, father's father. And so, you know, and so once you understand that, you would have the inherent nature to struggle, to fight. Okay. And all of us, you know, individually, like, just like as individuals, you know, we all can't, we all are not boxing champions, or we all not wrestling champions, we all not judo champions or karate champions. That doesn't matter how well, how good we fight. It matter the fact is that we will fight. You got to fight the bully back. That's how I was raised. You fight the bully back. You don't let the bully you. You know? And so that's the same principle coming back from my family to current. That's our practice. And and I try to extend that to everybody, because there's no really counter to that. You see? And there's no really counter to who we are. You know, everybody want to get in this discussion about who you are and who you represent and call up all different types of names. You know, you can still call us all the names. We can be called, we can call ourselves all the names that we ever been called. But for reparation purposes, we got to identify ourselves as those descendants of African slaves in the United States. Pure and simple. We can still call ourselves niggers, negroes, negritos, Afro-Americans, African-Americans, blacks, colored. We can call all that. If you got any more you want to call, you can go to the religions down there and call ourselves Moors, Christians, Muslims, all that. Whatever, it doesn't matter. The fact that matters is that you make sure you align all those ascriptions and descriptions to what happened to you and your ancestors.
Okay.
Then that's who you are. That's what the law says. You see? And so the battle is on three fronts now. And then COBRA is engaged with all of them. One, the legislative front. Two, the legal front. Three, the moral front. See? And we got to take these things on simultaneously. We got to put these issues on the superhighway and deal with them based on our skill sets. And everybody got a skill set. See? There's no more than sharpened pencils. They're good pencil sharpeners. We need those too. So that's how I demystify it. That's how I roll with this. And it withstands any test, no matter where it comes from. The three major areas that I just mentioned. Government, colleges and universities, the church, and corporations, financial institutions. And one of the first things I did when I came, I tell you what happened, really sparked me. Because my wife at the time wanted me to cool down a little bit, because I would do a lot of advocacy down in Little Rock around Veterans Affairs. But what triggered me, the trigger to fight in me, was that I heard Wachovia deny its involvement with enslavement. And it was done by the History Factory, or something like that, called the History Factory. They expend Wachovia's history to a point like they really didn't do anything. You know, Bank of America didn't do anything. Well, the Bank of America did everything.
Mm-hmm.
You see? And it was done by, and at that time, some of the officials of the Bank of America was Robert Morris, who used to be a mayor of Philadelphia. Robert Morris. So and then he comes out of with the folks out of University of Penn, University of Penn, one of the oldest college and universities. It first was named College of Pennsylvania, now it's the University of Penn, one of the oldest enslaving universities in the country. And we are engaged with them right now, you see? And they're changing things over there. the students are being involved with the issue of reparations. They've had two forums in the last 2 years. Last two years on reparations. You see, one in law school, the panels on in that symposium, and just recently dealing with the medical science impact on African Americans, on descendants of African slaves in the United States. And at that time, it was four women on the panel, and they dealt with the issue of women, how women were so mistreated medically. You see, it was gut wrenching to me. I was just a member of the audience. It was gut wrenching. And when Q&A came up, I didn't have a question. I just had to give them a reaction. I said, look, I don't have no questions. I just want to give you my reaction. And I acknowledge all those sisters who were brave enough to sit on that panel and call the question, you know, and talk about what happened to our women under this thing called chattel slavery. They did whatever they wanted to do with our women, internally and externally. And those sisters represented us. I felt so good. That's all I could do was give my reaction to them. And so, you know, you got to deal with your inherent understanding of right and wrong, you see? And we have the capacity. Slaves don't have the capacity. They don't give us, slaves were not given the capacity of right and wrong, understand what's right and wrong. All they was given us the capacity to accept, to do what the master say. So when you break free from that type of bondage, then you understand what right and wrong is and your responsibility, your own human agency to speak the truth to power. That's your agency. If you do if you respond to your inherent agency, then you can identify your status in this country. And if you can identify your status in this country, that is descendants of African slaves in the United States, then you can identify your standing to put forth your issues and your demand for reparations. That's key. And so that's the foundation I always want to give to folks. Give them that foundation, that infrastructure.
Brother Ari, before mm-hmm. I pass the mic to you, Brother Richard, the last time that you had, because I'm looking at some information here from February 23rd, when you had a 40 acres and a mule in the 21st century at the symposium in Germantown up at the Cliveden House. Do you notice after your years of being on this front, more of people being interested to find out what's going on around the conversation of reparations for the enslavement of our ancestors? Do you notice more of a participation?
Right after that, that's when this thing, all the politicians blew up and put reparations out there on the map.
Okay.
Because not necessarily because of that symposium, but because of the 31 years that we've been driving this question of reparations home. See, because it's unavoidable, man. You know, it's unavoidable. So they know they're going to have to face the question. And so through our obviously communicating with each other, communicating with those entities I just named, the federal government, the state government, you know, churches, financial institutions, higher education institutions, it drives it home. They begin to share what we share with them if they didn't do anything with what we gave to them when we was in front of them. They shared it with their other colleagues. And they had some deep discussion about it based on what they know to be true. And so that got to be a meeting of the minds. Once they understand, once they accept what they know to be true, we accept what we know to be true. Guess what? It's time to negotiate reparations. And when I want to underscore, capitalize, bold, this word called negotiate reparations. We're not going to allow, and this is one of the things I said in my opening comment, a little 5-minute presentation I gave, and let me acknowledge everybody, it wasn't my symposium. It was set up by the Philadelphia chapter of Encobra in conjunction with State Representative Chris Rabb.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Rabb is sponsoring a localizing the H.R. 40 law here in the state of Pennsylvania. Just as what's at the national level, the congressional level, he's likewise doing it at the national level. And this thing called localizing H.R. 40 came from my testimony before the U.S. Congress reparations form that John Conyers had in 2011. And I told them, you know, that in order for them to get this thing out of committee, that is H.R. 40, we're going to have to localize our demand. Because once we localize our demand, guess who we localize it with? Our local politicians. You follow me?
Okay.
And it's the local politicians got to interact with the congressional politicians. That's where the pressure comes. Just like for the very first time, guess who is a co-signer of H.R. 40 out of the state of Pennsylvania now? He looks just like me and you.
Oh, I listen. I know who you're talking about. He's a representative from up there in the Germantown area.
Dwight Evans. United States Congressman Dwight Evans. He took over Chocolate Fatah's district. He's now co-sponsor, man.
Well, you know what? I want to come back and talk about that because some of the things you're talking about, especially with some of these local politicians now that are starting to speak, I want to come back and talk about that because that's important. But Rich, I'm passing the mic to Brother Richard.
Yeah, you know.
Hey, Brother Rich, how you doing, man?
All right. You know, and you know, I heard you twice in dealing with university when the University of Pennsylvania did a forum on reparations coming out of, I think it was the law school, and you were on the panel.
Were you there?
Yes.
Were you there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And also just recently, as you were speaking about the. Yes, yes.
Hey, man. Beautiful.
So,
how you doing?
Oh, good, good, good. And when you were at the, they just had the whole thing around at the University of Pennsylvania as far as dealing with Penn's involvement with slavery. And as the undergrad students are dealing with that. And as just as you said, you know, listening to the panelists kind of bring forward the medical kind of experimentation that they did on African women, and as a part of Penn's involvement, it wasn't necessarily a plantation, as they said, it wasn't about plantation involvement as far as getting money, but it was about, as we acknowledge, the production of knowledge, because the whole thing of scientific racism comes out of that university. But let me ask you to kind of develop what you were saying about local at this point. What do you are pushing in the local area that the city should do something in relationship to reparations. Can you expand on what is it that you see that in Coburg locally should be doing?
I'm going to talk about what we should be doing and what we are doing. But first, before I go there, Richard, I want to acknowledge you because you stood up on your 2 feet and you raised some very critical issues at that last symposium on medicine and slavery. But I just want to acknowledge you for that, man. And I let one say that I appreciate you for that. And I respect you for that because that's what we need to do. We all need to be able to add to the conversation, expand upon it, because those who really... And you're a reparations too. And so those who are really touching it with right now are the educators, the professors, the elected officials, religious folks. They're dealing with staff from on the higher ground, right? We're down here on the ground, and we're representing the folks who it all happened to. They are talking about us and what they and how they can repair us. We can't let them do that. So I'll pause right there to acknowledge you, my brother, and
thank
go
you.
Back to your question of what we're doing locally in Philadelphia. Right now, we're dealing with primarily is trying to get Philadelphia slavery disclosure law enforced. That's a law on the books. We're looking for an attorney right now. Because the law is on the books, we have to get the city to do what the law requires it to do. And the city has a clear duty to follow the law. They can't get away from that. We got to just present. We got to go and make them represent us in terms of enforcing the law. You know? And so right now we're looking for some lawyers to put forth what we call, a writ of mandamus, which is basically forcing the city to do what the law requires it to do. I'm part of a veterans organization called Poor Man's Soldier Heart Ministry, and we won a major lawsuit. You know, a major far-reaching precedent-setting lawsuit using the writ of mandamus. Because we found the law in the book that says that the city of Philadelphia, i.e. the county of Philadelphia, must have a director of Veterans Affairs. And they haven't had one operate in 55 years. You see that? And every administration that came on board, they did the same thing. There's nothing. Didn't follow the law. Until I found out about the law through the Penn State University, they did some research on the state of county Veterans Affairs in the state of Pennsylvania. And when I saw that, they said that Pennsylvania did, out of 67 counties in Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania was only the only one that did not have a director of Veterans Affairs. So I asked Councilman Curtis Jones to sponsor an official hearing. And he did. It was resolution something. He called that hearing to understand the readiness of the city of Philadelphia to serve returning veterans. So in respect to slavery disclosure, we could use the same law, the same legal theory to have them enforce the law. That is a writ of mandamus. Now, it's going to be hard for you to find a lawyer that look like us that doesn't really want to do it unless he feel the injury inherently, like we do. Then he'll say, oh, man, shit, I'm not letting this go away. I got skills. I'm going to file this thing right now. It's a very simple matter. So anyhow, we're dealing with enforcement of slavery disclosure law. And Philadelphia is one of 16 states and cities combined that has a slavery disclosure law. But what distinguished our slavery disclosure law is that you got to do something upon disclosure. And that thing is that upon disclosure, you must present to the city, quote unquote, a financial reparations plan. That's the language we got in our law in Philadelphia. So we got the language that we want in there. Now time for enforcement. And I tried at the symposium with the law school, I called Dean out. He was in the room. I called him right out and said, look, man, we need some help with enforcing Philadelphia slavery disclosure law, because they had me on to present on that subject. And I said, what you need to do is get these second and third year law students to be involved with us of moving the research forward so we can actually start the enforcement process. They haven't done it yet, but I'm still working on it. In fact, one of the law professors, I can't come up with a name right now. I see her face, but I can't come up with a name. But she was at both symposiums, particularly the last one being the medical science and slavery. And she said, Audrey, you know, I'm overworked, man. I said, I'm overworked, because she's a professor of law, then she deals with some other types of areas of education, higher education.
That's Dorothy Roberts. Is that Dorothy
Roberts? That's who it is. That's who it is. Dorothy Roberts. I got nice locks and whatnot. And so she said, look, but I think I'm going to get some relief, because I got me a senior fellow to work with me. And she introduced me to him doing the medical science and slavery. And the brother, we read on. He said, man, he's out of town. He said, no, soon I come back after the spring break, we're on. And he understood what we was up against. He said, it's a man, look, not a problem. We're going to run with this thing. And so we're going to move with it. We're going to move with that. So that's what we're doing there. So same thing with our churches. Now we started with the Jesuit, the Catholic Church, because they dealt with education, i.e., starting off being the Catholic Church of George Washington University, right? And I told the president of George Washington University, look, man, at the time they had a contrition, this public contrition about realizing finally that they were involved with enslaving 272 descendants of African slaves in the United States, descendants of Africans. And I told him at the time after we did the open of presentation, I said, look, I said, I want to just acknowledge you for your courage to step forward, to raise this issue and identify Georgetown as an enslaver. I said, now, but you doing it alone means nothing, really. It's not going to have no impact. In fact, you should engage your colleagues, presidents of other universities, into doing the same thing. And then you all begin to put your heads together to talk about what actually is your responsibility. I said, then you can come and meet with Incobra. We have our folks. We have the reparation movement folks. We can come and sit down on each side of the table and come up with some type of what I like to call a reparations accord. Now, this reparations accord not only just deal with local stuff, in the instance that I talked with Georgetown, but it really came to mind with the United States Congress. And based on the fact that our people, our ancestors, did not have no input at all in the Emancipation Proclamation. And the input that they gave to Lincoln was dismissed, right? It was dismissed out of hand. They just wanted to hear what they had to say. And one of the key things that they said, I wish I was at home, I had pull up the notes and call some names of these preachers. But they said, first of all, we want separation. We can't get along with y'all. We can't get along with y'all folks. That's what they basically said. And we want land. That's where it all come from, man. And so we got the historical record at the highest level in that respect. And
your brother, Chris, I wanted to raise something in relationship to another point that you raised and just to develop when you talk about the agency standing and the legal aspect.
Yeah, the
status. And I noticed that you constantly raise the point that we have to define peoplehood. Can you develop that for me, for us?
Yeah.
As far as what do you mean when you say that and how that relates to the reparations, the call for reparations?
Okay. All right. The context. I like to play what you share with me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Okay. I like to play what I call the context card. You know, these white folks and some of our folks always want to play the race card, and each one of them play it in a different way. But I like to play the context card. And the context card is what happened to us here in the United States, right? They declared war against us, burrowed over here, sold us, you see? And so now, in order to deal with that piece, so therefore the first thing they took from us was our peoplehood, the knowledge of who we are. And they gave it back to us in this movie called Roots. You remember Roots?
Mm. Yeah.
You remember Roots?
Yes.
What did the first thing they do to Kute Kinte? They took his peoplehood. They took his culture and every understanding of who he was. That's what they did to us as a group. They took our peoplehood from us, disconnected us from our families, our brothers, our sisters, our wives, our uncles, our husbands. You see? And refused to allow us to read. Refused to allow us education. Refused to allow us to act as humans, to be able to testify against another in court. To sue somebody like anybody else would if they harmed. And a whole bunch of other stuff. So that's what happened to us. So therefore, before we get into the economics, injury areas of economics, education, health, political prisoners, right? Mass incarceration, what's the last piece I want to come up with? Repatriation, all right? The right to return. And Ghana's having a year of right return this year, too. And I'm going to be there. But anyhow, so they stole off, they destroyed, it was a monstrous destruction of life, culture, and human possibilities. That's what they did. That's the destruction. That's what chattel slavery was all about. And they did it in every area of human behavior. Right? They did it in terms of they destroyed us economically, educationally. They destroyed us in terms of labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. All those human behaviors, they destroyed all that from us. So in order for us to, when we talk about the demand of reparations, the how to, we got to be prepared as a people again. Because if we don't prepare ourselves as a people, we have no standing to sit at the table of humanity with all other people, identifiable people, based on their culture, facts, and circumstances, or who they were or who they are. So that's why I'm saying that people is everything first. But you know what people are doing there and the politics are doing there? Because it's easy for them to do. They ain't going for the economic. They come up with all the things what reparations look like. For me, I'm not going to go through that gymnastics of what would reparations look like. We got it all recorded. Over 31 years, we got the thing down. We know what it looked like. But even still with that, we got to negotiate the deal. You see? And if anybody say that's what reparations really should look like, they really don't know. They really don't. They're just posturing. Or they can come up with a shopping list like everybody has come up with a shopping list. You see? But when you put all those shopping lists together, then you have the type of foundation that you can negotiate. And everything that deals with our human capital development is on the table. Everything deals with our lives, our culture, right? All our human possibilities on the table. And see, we deal with that in the collective sort of way first and foremost. That's our foundation. Then we begin to identify the particular types of programs and projects that we would engage in once we receive the reparation dollars. There's reparation dollars, and there's what Brother Mulata Korea calls doo-doo dollars. We want reparation dollars. We don't want no doo-doo dollars. Reparation dollars, those dollars that we use to determine what we want our self-determination, to repair ourselves the way we want to repair ourselves. Not like these folks, these candidates are doing that, coming up with all these different ways, what would reparations look like, and all that type of stuff. And that's no more than aid when you demystify. They're talking about aid again. And you know what happened to us when they give us aid, right? They still control you, still enslaved. They control you with the aid. No, we want some independence. And therefore, we must negotiate the amount of the dollars, and that's it. We've got all types of calculations. Once we negotiate the amount of dollars, then that's the finished deal. And we win that piece, then we use those dollars and make reparations happen the way we want it to happen. The full repair like we wanted it to happen in those five injuries that I named. You see? And that's a reparation accord to sign off on, because of course, you know, we didn't have the opportunity to sign off on the Emancipation Proclamation. So we want a reparations accord for descendants of African slaves in the United States. And that abscription I keep mentioning, DAS, descendants of African slaves in the United States, is our identifier. It's not only our identifier for us in the United States, but it's identifier, a collective unifier for us all around the African diaspora. It's identified for descendants of African slaves in Brazil, descendants of African slaves in Great Britain, descendants of African slaves in the Caribbean. You follow me? You follow that logic?
Yes, ma'am.
And it's impenetrable. And so, therefore, that logic of identifying who we are, that people who were enslaved, then it becomes a unifier when we get outside of and connect with our brothers and sisters outside the United States. But first, like everything else, everything starts at home, starts right there where you are. That's where we got to fight. We can't go to Great Britain and fight for those brothers and sisters over there. We can't go to the Caribbean and fight for them. They got those in battle. That's where they're supposed to be doing a fight for reparations. And many areas, they're doing a great job. See? So we got to fight right here in the United States. And once we win, and we will win as we fight and don't give up, then then everybody's going to look at us. Great Britain did something with the Caribbean folk there. They gave some type of reparations that they agreed to.
Well, brother, Arvin,
that's not going to flow to us.
Do me a favor. We're going to take a brief break. I know. I think you can stay with us a little bit after the 8 o'clock hour because there's some calls. I want you to take some calls.
How long have we been on already?
We've been on about 50 minutes.
How many?
50.
Woo. I know another 30 more.
Good.
You see, I get in the zone.
Good.
We're getting in the zone, and I haven't mentioned the things I need to mention. I need to mention where people get more information.
Oh, yeah. We're going to get to all that. But we're going to take a brief break.
Don't let me forget, okay? I won't.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, you can get involved in the conversation with the Northeast representative of Encobra, Brother Ari Beretta Zion. You can join the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We got some calls on hold, and we'll get to them right after the break.
All right, come over, sir.
Listening to Time for an Awakening, Time for an Awakening, with host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
For 12 years, I and others like me have held out radiant promises of progress. I had preached to them about my dream. I had lectured to them about the not too distant day when they would have freedom all here now. Amen. I had urged them to have faith in America and in white society. Their hopes had soared. They were now booing me because they felt that we were unable to deliver on our promises. They were booing because we had urged them to have faith in people who had too often proved to be unfaithful. They were now hostile because they were watching the dream that they had so readily accepted turn into a frustrating nightmare. And so the collision course is set.
The the desegregation decisions and other type of legislation and Supreme Court decisions depends upon changing the white man's mind. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches us that our own mind has to be changed. We have to change our mind about ourselves.
In what way?
Well, so he teaches us the importance of moral reformation, a knowledge of self. And for instance, the average so-called Negro, he doesn't think that he can go into business and provide jobs for himself. And because of this, he thinks that he can only get a job from the white man, or he can only get clothes from the white man, or he can only get food from the white man. And we who follow the Honorable Elijah Muhammad are taught that the same thing that the white man has done for himself and his kind, if our people could be if we could be cured of our slave mentality that was indoctrinated into us during slavery, we would realize that just as the white man can do these things for himself and his kind, we can get together in unity and harmony and do the same thing for ourselves and our kind.
I'm not wondering at all about them. I'm concerned with the suffering and the pain of the masses of black people. No one wants to pay reparations. The Jews received over $100 billion in reparations and gets $4 billion annually. A Holocaust museum was set up for them on this soil for over $200 million, and they get $21 million annually just for operating expenses. But the Catholic Church, the Pope, the Jews, the Arabs, white people in general, no one wants to pay reparations to these, the sons and daughters of Africa. So I speak to them. I don't speak to the family of those two Jews. There are too many of us for me to speak to them.
And one of the reasons why I'm always happy to come to this organization, because you're the only one, you're the only black organization, again, that understands to put race first. Race first. Race first. And I've had some white folks to tell me that I was a flaming militant, a radical, or whatever all of these names were that they called me. And I said that I am very pleased that you've called me a nationalist, because you could have said that I was a member of the NAACP or the Urban League. So I said, I'm very pleased of the names that you have given. But I said that because we put race first, something is wrong with us. But everybody else puts their own first, because God bless the child who has his own. And so I think that race first is very important. And though we meet in a different venue, we're not at the slave theater, we're not at the church, we're now at the Masonic Temple. It really does not matter where we are physically. It matters where we are in our minds. And wherever we meet, as long as we know that we're Africans and as long as we know that we are black people living here in America, we know exactly who we are. You notice you can put an Uncle Tom in any venue in the White House. You can even put him in his. He's going to still be a Tom. You can put him anywhere you want. Well, it's the same thing with us who are strong people. Wherever we are, we're going to be the people that we need to be.
Let me just say this before our time winds up. And that is, I want the people in the audience to go back and look at the video clip from Roots. It's entitled something like Breaking Kunta Kinte. That scene opens with Lorne Greene sitting in, who's the plantation master, sitting in his office, and then Fiddler comes in and says, we don't want to be too hard on the runaway. Kunta Kinte has just run away and been caught. And so the time comes for him to get his lashing. And if you look at this scene, it's about 9 minutes, and study study the scene. Study the role of everybody or bodies that are in this particular clip. And you will find that there is an equivalent role in the political life of our country today, whether it's on the national level or on the local level. There's the black man who actually does the whipping of Kunta Kinte. There's the white man who does the whipping. There's the black man who intervenes with the boss man and tries to save the life of Kunta Kinte. There's Kunta himself, who eventually is forced to admit that his name is Toby. And there's dozens of bystanders, black, who are watching. This is a very powerful scene. And it's an analogy of exactly what is happening in our community today. Let's give those characters names in our community and call them what they are and then take care of business about that.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:11 in the city of Philadelphia, and we're in conversation this evening with the Northeast representative of NCOBRA, Brother Ari Maredesan, is with us, talking reparations and some other things. And you can get involved in the conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. Let's go to a few calls here. Brother Ari, you still with
us? Yes, sir, I'm here.
Good. Let's go to Newport News.
From my car on the road. On the road. In Princeton, New Jersey.
We're getting a little interference. Hold on a second. Let me put this call back on hold. All right. Let's go to caller, what's your name? Where you calling from? Caller, what's your name? Where you calling from? Okay, maybe they didn't step away or don't want to talk. Let's go to 404.
Hey, peace and blessings, Brother Elliot. Hey, man, look here, bro. I'm glad my man on here about this reparation. I told y'all about how I feel, but I want to talk to my man. These stupid Negroes today, they celebrating a Cablo Asian winning the slave owner's game called the Master. Okay? That's how stupid our people are, man. Okay? And then, talking about reparations, like I told y'all, Elliot, man, reparation real time is, I saw in Chicago where this girl got drugged down the steps by the police, and her daddy was standing right there, man, while the police drug and kicked her daughter. So I'm for reparation real time, man. Okay? That's what I'm about right now. Reparation real time. Once we show these devils that we mean business reparation real time, then we can talk about reparation for our ancestors, man. Okay? Because we the only species on the planet that don't take care of even a doggone ant all the way to the big elephant and the big whale and sharks in the water and look after their own, man. Okay? That's what y'all think about that, man.
Well,
that
I mean,
question for me? For everybody. Well, let me start some of the guests. And I really thank Brother Elliot and Brother Richard for allowing me to come on as a guest. Because you got to be clear that we have the capacity to convert the interests of the descendants and slavers. When you say real time, you're talking about yourself and us. That's real time. I remember 2 or 3 years ago, I was talking about reparations in our lifetime. I said we have to, like, kind of demystify this thing called now. We also say reparation now. You know, now is now. I mean, it's very fleeting. It's past, present, and future. I said, well, you got to give people something that they can measure. And so I started talking about reparation in our lifetime. Maybe we can measure that. So that when we say reparation in our lifetime, we got to start doing something to make it happen. Right? And we know we don't have no army or anything like that, so don't even go there about, you know, turning some reparation.
But look here, bro. You can protect yourself.
One thing, don't do for me. Look, let me finish talking. I let you finish talking, then we both can conversate, right? I'm gonna wind it up and let you go and ask your next question or comment on what I've said, okay? So my point is this here, that we got to have the capacity to do what we can do with what we have. And right now, is that as our capacity to divest from this country, right? And divest, first and foremost, our power to change our financial institutions that we're involved with one. You know, the major financial enslavers are Wells Fargo, Bank of America, and what's the other green bank in Philadelphia? Citizens Bank.
Mm-hmm.
Those are three in Philadelphia where all our tax dollars in Philadelphia is kept in those banks. So we already have a law on the book that's saying that they got to disclose and put together a reparation plan for us. And so that's where the enforcement comes. I don't like talking away above and beyond ourselves. I want to talk real. I want to talk to that person that hit me in my punched me in my face right in front of me. I want to deal with that. And see, because once we deal with that, we're gonna set a precedent for all others that we're gonna fight back and we're gonna fight back directly. You see, and so fighting directly right now with what we have is getting these folks to the table, and you divest from their financial institutions. That's what you got to do. And they'll tell you, when you start messing with our money, we'll come to the table. When you start threatening our money, we'll come to the table. And a good example of that is South African divestment campaign. That's our evidence-based project that we can do to make change in the United States. You see? And then you talk about actually educating people as well. So you engage all those folks. You engage the government. You engage the financial institution. You engage the college and university. You engage the church. And there's enough of us, reparations, who can do that. We either pick one that we have a passion to deal with, and we roll with them. But we already got them on the hook. They're already walking towards. They're already injured, man, after 31 years. That's why they're walking towards and they're talking this talk called reparations.
But look here, man. I see what you say. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Okay? All right. Number one, look at it tomorrow, April 15th. Okay, we get taxation without representation. Okay, and now that old boy done rigged the tax thing up, everybody gonna owe. All right. So how many people you can get to say, hell no, we ain't paying taxes? That's one
there. Trust me, I'm not going to get anybody to say they ain't paying taxes. I'm going to pay mine because I don't want to go to penitentiary.
Well, see, there you go. You feed the system, bro. You feed the system right now.
But you don't pay any taxes? Are you telling me that? You don't pay any taxes?
Well, what you think, man? I tell you that.
I think you pay
hell
taxes.
No. Hell
you sound
no.
like you be a reasonable person.
Not no doubt.
All right, brother Wes, we're going to let you.
Let me tell you one more thing. I'm going to tell you one more thing, man.
Let me say
one more thing to your next caller, man, because I don't like to go back and forth. My point is, if these devils put their hand on you, what you going to do, like Dr. King and turn another cheek?
I'm
my own army, man.
Wes, listen. Brother Ari.
So you heard me on the first, when I first came on, how I deal with those type of situations. So, you know, you're not going to punch me in the face and get away with it, okay? So don't
All right, that's
that.
Good, then. All right, then that's good. We agree.
So the thing is to do something. Do what you can. You got to engage these folks.
I depend on myself, man.
What city do you live in, bro? What city do you live in?
I live right outside Atlanta, Georgia, bro. I depend on myself.
All right, but then there's a lot. There's a lot of folks, a lot of reparations in Atlanta. And so you can gauge them. And you, in fact, you can go on to our website.
I've been to y'all in Cobra office, downtown, upstairs on People Street, man, okay? So yeah. I'm in the game with you, man.
Okay, good. Glad to know that, man. Appreciate you, too.
Yes, sir. But I just want to get our people to defend ourselves, man. When somebody put their hand on it, it's time for us to return the favor, man. That's all I'm trying
to say. Well, right now, there's a lot of us who they're not putting their hands on. And me and you might be one of, maybe two of those folks. And
right.
Most of our, this program. So we stick
yes,
we
sir.
Can do something still. We can't
yes,
wait
sir.
For those folks. You see?
Thank you for your call, Brother West.
All right.
Yeah, next call, man.
Appreciate your call, man. Really do.
Let's go. Let's again go to Newport News. Are you ready? Newport News.
Newport News. Hello, comrade.
You got too many things going on in the background. It's an echo.
I'm trying to make sure I got it turned off. I'm sorry, I had the computer going too. Yeah, I just want to applaud the guest because that's the most comprehensive presentation I've heard from an Encobra spokesman. And I'm just going to leave it there. But most of the people on the platform know I'm also involved with ADOS. So I'm trying to figure out how to stop this generational divide and get us on one accord. And I like a lot of things he said. I'm going to be sure to share this particular podcast across all of my platforms. I'll leave it there.
And I thank you so much for that, man. I'm encouraged and look for you in the field.
Oh, I'm doing the work, and I'm just wondering why so much discord, but you're so late in the program now, I don't even think it's worth trying to interject that into the conversation.
Well, you know, there's a lot of conflict right now. There's a lot of conflict between this group called ADOS, American Descendants of Slavery.
Yes, and, sir, and I'm involved in that group.
Let me talk to you directly. ADOS came on the scene, man, attacking Encobra, all right? That's organization to organization, right? And they claim to be American descendants of slaves. Well, see, that's a lot of right-wing extremist groups, politicians, could still call us that, American slaves, right? American descendants of slaves. So I'm saying that we can't fall into their hook. We can't move with that language, because that language does not speak to our people who are who we are, you see? And so we reached out to Sister Carnell and Brother Tune and all that, but they're running away from us. They want to talk to us because we're talking about some peace, we're talking about some collaboration, some coalition, but they don't want that, right?
Can you repeat what you just said, Brother Ari?
What was the last thing I said?
No, what you just said a second ago. Just
okay,
repeat
well,
that again.
Respect to ADOS, right?
Yes.
I'm saying
you tried to reach out to people.
ADOS and Cobra. Those are two organizations. They hold themselves out. They don't hold themselves out as people per se.
No. I'm talking about you reaching out to people that have that are supposed to be in leadership of organizations and they didn't respond. That's what I want you to repeat.
Yeah. Yeah, we did. Hey, look, not only that, my colleague, Professor Professor of Law, Benelia Randall, she reached out to him on her page called racism.org. I reached out to him on my Facebook page where I try to communicate with them. They blocked us from communicating with them.
Okay.
But the record is clear about how we feel about it. We have all that on our pages, right? And in fact, Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, after that symposium that we had on the 23rd Reparation Awareness Symposium, 10 days later, I get a threatening phone call for someone representing the ADOS, saying he's a member of ADOS, and that we better not try and steal their reparations. And what he was talking about the term that we use, descendants of Africans, enslaved in the United States. See, and he put that in conflict with the American descendants of slaves. You know, so he think that's a difference. And really, we agree on the same thing. We're saying the immigrants, the new African immigrants, are not descendants of African slaves in the United States.
Now, Brother Aubrey, let me ask.
They likewise identify this African immigrant as somebody that don't deserve reparation. Well, the fact of circumstance, they don't deserve it.
Brother Aubrey, let me ask you a question based on what you just stated.
Yeah.
about after the
support. I don't get to respond to it.
Yeah, you can respond. Brother Ari, let me ask you a question based on what you just stated about the symposium that I had asked you about that you had here locally. You mentioned that after the symposium, you got a threatening phone call from somebody saying they were from ADOS and whatever they the threat was posed. Now, you've been involved in this front for a number of years. And Krober networks with other groups, MBUF, December 12th. You've been involved on this front. Have you ever got threatening phone calls, disparaging remarks from any of the other groups in reference to your work in behalf of our ancestors?
Absolutely not. Never.
So do you find that odd and strange? And do your antennas go up when you have groups out there that say they represent our ancestors getting reparations, but threatening other historical groups that have a track record in doing this work?
Okay, look here. Are you on Twitter? Because there's a lot of evidence that speaks to what we're alluding to right now.
Well, the gentleman, he's on Twitter. He's aware of it.
I hear you speaking for me.
No, you can speak for yourself. Go ahead. The floor is yours.
First off, Brother Ari, I personally apologize to you for any threats you got. And I want to make this clear. ADOS started as a movement to educate young people on the reparations. Now, pardon me?
What year was that when it started?
I'm about to tell you.
Okay.
The actual work started about 3.5 years ago. Now, I'm going to say this, and then what I'm going to do is connect with you on Twitter, because I'm on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.
Oh,
and I'll also end up sharing my email, so perhaps you and I can talk. But I want to say I'm not going to try to go item by item and argue in public over this.
Right.
In fact, ADOS is a movement. It is not, quote, an organization. That is part of what trying to police some of the knuckleheads that do the stuff that is not helping us as a people. That
right.
is not the intention of the movement. Now, what I'm going to say to you is, when you give me a narrative about attacking Nkrumah, that's not at all exactly what happened. And I posted some receipts, and I'm going to tell you this. Rather than try to delineate this over the air, what I'm going to do is get your information, send it to you. I'll even send you my number, and then you and I can talk, because I'm a few years behind you. I'll be 67 in July. What I'm trying to do is put this disruption behind us so we can get back on the page. And I'm going to tell you
this. I appreciate
that, man. What was said by you, I wish that was everything that was done in public, because, in fact, just today, an article was published with some internal documents from Nkrumah. And it really doesn't look like that's what Nkrumah did. And once you read the article, then you and I can talk. I shared it in the chat section of this Uber conference, and I'm going to tell you again. ADOS is having a conference coming up in October. That's when they'll try to form some formal groups. But again, I personally apologize to you for the people who have made it personal, because this movement is bigger than any individual.
I've said that before
on this platform and others, and I think in the future we'll be able to work it out. I'll leave it there.
Well, I like that, my brother. Let me, if you want my email, I'll give that to you right now. It's a public email. It's my name.
Give me just a second. I want to write it on my notepad.
You can start there.
As soon as it pops up, I'm going to start typing.
So it's important, man. Yeah. I really appreciate you for doing that, man, for saying, to reaching out like you're doing, because we need that. We need that type of walking towards each other instead of throwing bricks at each other. You follow me?
Exactly, sir. And I'll tell you, once we talk, we'll be able to go over some of what transpired, because in reality, ADOS really hit the national limelight when Joy Reid came on and tried to claim that the hashtag that we use during the political education was actually Russian bots. So the first spray did not come as an attempt to defame Nkrumah. And Cobra and the rest of it end up coming into conflict when we started defending ourselves over the bot recognition. So you and I will get a chance to hash this out in private, but I'm going to type your email
yes,
now
sir.
And hope it helps. Go.
No problem. It's my first and last name, R-E-A-R-I dot Meretazon. It's spelled M-E-R-R-E-T-A-Z-O-N at gmail.com.
At gmail.com.
Yeah, and put in the subject line, Eidos or Deus, either one. That's what I got.
Okay, yes. I, as a matter of fact, I'm about to hit the email now to make sure that you get it, and I'll include my phone number. Thank you for your patience.
And thank you so much for your call, too, my brother. Appreciate it.
Power to the people, but only those willing to fight.
That's great.
I've been at it a long time.
There it is right there.
Thank
fight
you.
Any way we
Peace.
Can.
Peace.
Peace, bro. Appreciate you.
Can I raise something?
Go ahead, Brother Richard.
Since my interest is, and I wanted to get you, and you did kind of begin to talk about it, commercial press saying, calling the television talking heads, commentators, and the political representatives, especially, you know, these ones that are running for the presidential election on the Democratic side, being a natural cynic, I'm kind of wanting to get an analysis of why now do they take this on in the public. We talked to Brother Cam, and I think you had mentioned it another time, that there was a period when Congressman Conyers was going to raise reparation, H.R. 40 on the board, and Nancy Pelosi told him not to because it would be divisive. So have you had any thoughts of why these political representatives in the national arena of the Democratic Party is willing to at least place it out there as far as reparations? Just any thought at all to that?
Yeah, I do have some. And I think it's big. You got to understand that for 31 years, and COVID been out here engaging with political officials at every level, engaging with churches at every level, engaging with higher education institutions at every level. And so then the logic of our argument passes over to them, so they can't avoid it. They can't avoid it when they talk to their colleagues about the subject, when it comes up in conversation. And so they now see that it's unavoidable, and they will say that themselves, that it's unavoidable for the United States to ignore the demand for reparations, right? And so they now got to figure out how you do that. And they got to figure it out in a narrative that they can control.
I'm glad you said that, Brother Harvey.
Huh?
I'm glad you said that, because myself, me and Brother Richard have been talking that same exact thing. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate that, man. I mean, but it's just common sense, man. And see, but you cannot ignore the work that's been done on the ground. You can't do that, because that's where the groundswell has come up to today. All that work, all the labor that the Queen Mother Moore put into, Imari Obadeli, George Foreman, et cetera, man. That work, those seeds were planted and they were nourished by those who stand on their shoulders. And so that's why now it's comfortable for everybody to talk about the R word, to say the R word now. They still got a problem with the N word, but they definitely got to talk about the R word, because it deal with their money. It deal with money, capital. And so that's how we convert their interest. So therefore they hear the groundswell. They hear the groundswell, man. They got to, because they're politicians. They got to hear what people are talking about on the ground. And so, therefore, they find a way, because they can't avoid it, because it makes sense, that I got to put this a part of my program. I got to tell them, say, yes, I support reparations, and this is what I think it should look like. Well, it's up for them to say they support it, but it's not up to them to say what it looked like. If they do that, if we allow them to do that, it's allowing a rapist and a murderer to dictate what his sentence should be, what type of penalty he should pay. We can't let that happen. And so that's why we got to engage these folks, and we got to identify ourselves, because they want to keep us divided, right? And we got to identify them in a way that they cannot challenge. And that's the facts and circumstances of what happened to us. I'm going to give you everybody a reference right now. On www.racism.org, you'll find a report by Professor Laura Vanilla Randall called the 2015 Dez Report. And she's talking to the United Nations, right? And you on Incorpora Online, on www.incorporaonline.org, you also see my presentation before the United Nations. They happened back in 2015 in Baltimore. She was there with me, right? And so you can see what we're saying. We're speaking with them globally, to the question globally, but we're also acting locally. You see? And so that working group of the United Nations, of descendants of Africans, they likewise are communicating with politicians as well. They communicate through their own organs, their own newsletters, whatnot. So the politicians know. They know their own history. Let's give them some credit.
Is that Brother Mustafa Asari and the Afro Descendants Confederation, Confederate Nation, you're speaking of, or is that someone else?
No, I'm speaking in regression to the webpage I talked about.
You were saying about the United Nations
report.
The report.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a report that myself and Professor Randall collaborated on, but she was the lead. She's the lead on that. Okay. I collaborated with her, you know, but she's the lead on that. It's on www.racism.org. And we it's beyond, for us, it's in addition to our work with the Census Bureau. We kind of get Dez as a part of our census identification. We're a little late for 2020 census, but we can do something in respect to that. And we're working with the Census Department to do something to put Dez on this census form, all right? And working towards actually declaring and identifying Dez as a legitimate ethnic group like all other ethnic groups. That's another thing from reparation, but it goes hand in hand with reparation. So, but I'm saying that, here's the report. You can look at it yourself. You can analyze the report. You can talk back to us about what's in that report, what's in our testimony we sent to the United Nations, all right? And it had a lot of input from a lot of different reparations organizations and individuals. So, you know, we touched every base. And so, but I like for folks to begin to look at that, man, and understand what we're saying. When we identify descendants of African slaves in the United States as a legitimate identifier of a group of people who have standing to sue and have moral standing to demand reparations. You see, they can't get around that. Now, they will get some black folks, the gatekeepers, to try and get us around it, get around, talk bad about it, and talk, come up with all types of other stuff. But they can't, that stuff's not going to stand either. You see? As long as we stand by our posts, represent who we are, and what happened to us.
And, what happened to us, you know, been exposed to the first online they have with, Gates has done around the Reconstruction, and that's directly to what has been done to us, and by law, by cultural custom, even by scientific identifier, to speak to your point. So if for those who may not be as clear, even though and need, you know, some kind of at least what's that, Cliff Notes, they can go to that to see it is not as brutal as it in reality, real time, taking, you say, the peoplehood away, but it does give a clear understanding of what was done to prevent the stripping down of us people and then prevent them from getting the what is due, especially in the United States.
Absolutely, and some of the sound bites that y'all had on just before the last break was powerful, man. It talked about all people. You gave an example, Kunta Kinte. I didn't talk to that sister about that. I don't know who that was.
Cynthia McKinney. When she was on our program, McKinney, and mentioned that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you talked to me. saying, man, it's all inherent knowledge that we have. It's in us to say who we are, and we know who we are. See? And even if we can't point to a specific ethnic group, but for the purpose of repair, we don't need to. See? But the facts of the circumstances that we can leverage in court and in the moral public square, that's who we are. Present those facts and circumstances.
Brother Ari, I'm going to make a statement, and I want your opinion on it, but I'm going to preface my statement by saying this, that I think that that the Creator has given all of us gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And some people's gifts is greater than others. And to be able to talk with certain folks and keep the focus is something that I have to work on. And when I say keep the focus, I'm saying this. When you, because you mentioned about the politician that's here in Philadelphia, that's a congressman. When you had a guy that's been sitting in office, in some type of political office, over 30 years,
mm-hmm.
that all of a sudden get a revelation that mm-hmm. he needs to be behind reparations, that would really grate my nerves. But I know that some of the men that's dealing in this struggle needs some of these people to understand who they're supposed to represent. But it really boggles my mind that when you get these people that really want to play politics, now I expect that from white folks, because just like you said, I believe that they're trying to get out in front of this and try to direct the narrative. But when you get some of our people playing this silly game, like the Cory Bookers, some of the folks that I'm talking about black, that's all of a sudden realizing, we need to speak on reparations. H.R. 40's been sitting in there under different congresses each year mm-hmm. and get the same amount of signers. It's 55 members in the CBC, and all of them don't even sign H.R. 40.
No, we got about 28 to 32 now signing. But
exactly. But I'm just saying, you know, because I know that when you talk with these people, you kind of need them to get on board with something to help move this thing along. But it's just, that's why I give you all the kudos and the admiration for your work, because everybody has a gift, and I don't know whether I could bear being in the room with some of them people. I just don't know.
Amen. Hey, man, I cannot talk about reparations in a casual way. So forgive, you know, I just can't do it. But I can do it in a way that's logical, you know, with whatever emotion and passion I have. And that's what we got to do. We got to make sure that when we talk about the narrative, that you have a logical narrative, right? And then as far as white is concerned, I'm calling by name, that we called on him. We encouraged him. He didn't do it on his own, some revelation from himself. But because we call upon him to do it, and his colleagues and his political colleagues, like, by talking that R word. So he got to be, you know, he saw safe zones, you see? you got to help these folks identify a safe zone for them to get involved. And the thing is, we got to get them involved. Whatever level they're able to do, get involved in a very, very sincere and committed sort of way. So he can get involved with H.R. 40 in a sincere and committed way by saying, hey, I'm a co-sponsor.
That's a powerful and important point to reemphasize, because even though, as you say, the number is up at 32, and I think it's around 50 members of the Congressional Black Caucus, and the number of members from the Congressional Black Caucus. So I'm saying this, you know, echoing what you're saying, Brother Ari,
yes,
to the mm-hmm. listening audience, because those at least. It shouldn't be, especially in this time, based off of the perspective that you just gave us, the analysis that you just gave us, there should be no reason why all the members of the Congressional Black Caucus do nothing but, if they don't do anything else, but at least sign H.R. 40.
That's right. And you got
that requires those of us who are standing on the sidelines, even for those of us who are Time for Listening, a Time for Awakening audience, to be able to call, as you said, Brother Ari, and talking to Dwight Evans, to call their congressional representatives and at least ask them or point them to at least put their name on the bill. There's no reason why they can't do that. And, you know, and so this gives us something that we can do. And if it is because, as you said, just need some encouragement and the time is right for them, can we who are listening or just standing around watching at this point, at least kind of in a social movement towards reparation, at least advocate for representatives, congressional representatives that's a part of the Congressional Black Caucus to consider to do that.
Yeah, absolutely, Brother Richard. I appreciate you saying that. But look, I think I'm lost track of time again. I know I'm moving into another hour, but I'm gonna try and I want to close it out with the how to, man. I want to
hear
some things about some basic things, the how to of reparations, right? First of all, you cannot allow any politician to tell you what reparations look like. There's always a long shopping list, huge shopping list, as long as all of our arms and height together, all right? What we have to do is negotiate all those things on those lists, right? All right, secondly, we got to deal with some things locally. We got to find out who those financial institutions are in our local cities, if they're Wells Fargo, if they're Bank of America, if they're Citizens Bank. We got to go after them with a slave. We got to get our local officials to put forth and pass a slavery disclosure bill to make it law. Once it's law, then we have to get it enforced. And we can get it enforced by filing a writ of mandamus which requires city officials, elected officials to do what the law requires them to do. We got the model, right? I already talked to a couple of lawyers that was working with me on this federal case. So we clear about that. So also, you got to be able to, and it's easy stuff, you got to start speaking the R word on your job. You got to talk to your colleagues about the R word. You got to talk with, well, mention the R word when you're at the water cooler together, in the bathroom together, and all the time that you can interact with people. Talk about reparations, because that's nothing but fertilizer. What's already on the seeds that's already been planted, you see? And that's going to continue to make this thing grow. And you got to make sure you represent them, say, hey, Incobra is our vanguard on the ground. Now, that's not a pushing to support Incobra alone, but Incobra has the coalition structure. It says, that coalition structure says that we can't do this alone. We need everybody who supports reparations. There's a lane for you on the reparations superhighway. So it's not about us beating our own drum. It's about us showing you that there's a coalition structure already existing that's been solid as a rock, has been lasting over 31 years. And we've done something, you see? And so those are some basic 3 points. And engage your financial institutions, engage your churches, engage your colleges and universities, especially the old ones that was the 1800s, you know? And once you start engaging with them, you communicate with us, and then we'll talk about how we can form a point of contact where we can engage them. We go meet with the folks, the decision makers at those institutions. So that and that in itself, we begin to convert their interest, man. I'm telling you. And then you talk about divestment. Back in 2007, a group of us in Philadelphia, we divested over $250,000 from Wachovia Bank. I think it's about 11 of us, including Wilson Good Jr., because he was the lead sponsor of the slavery disclosure law. Our objective was to demonstrate that it could be done. And we converted the interest of Wachovia Bank to the extent they felt now, because of the groundswell, they need to change their name. And they changed their name to Wells Fargo.
Mm-hmm.
And but the trustees remain the same.
Okay.
The policies remain the same. So I'm just exemplifying that we got to keep the R word on our lips and our tongue.
And Brother Ari, I want you to repeat that, because I don't want our listening audience that's not local to get that misconstrued. You said Wilson Good Jr.
Right, Wilson Good Jr.
Okay.
Not Wilson Good Senior.
Okay.
Great distinction, you know.
Okay.
In fact, we're trying to get Wilson Good Senior sign taken down, and we're still working on that.
All right, and we felt it was, as you know, Brother Elliot, you know, we felt that was totally out of order, totally disrespectful to move and to black folks in Philadelphia, you know, to honor this man who called for the bomb to be dropped on the move's home. So, yeah, so we got all that going on, man. And reparations must be a part of any candidate forum. That must be raised in these candidate forums.
Yes.
In fact, my veterans organization, we have a candidate forum at Triumph Baptist Church on May 11th.
Now, wait a minute.
We're going to talk.
Where is that again?
At Triumph Baptist Church, located at Germantown Avenue in Hunting Park. It'd be at 10 a.m. on May 11th. Be from 10 to 2 p.m., 4 hours.
Richard, that might right. be an avenue where you could let some of the young people know that that said what they can do. I think Brother Richard mentioned to me that some young people had approached him about things that they can do politically.
Well, I'm right. Look here. I put up the save the date maybe about 3 or 4 weeks ago. I'm putting up the actual invitation for everybody who have an issue to come to talk to those candidate forums. And we control, look, last 4 years, 4 years ago, we controlled that forum because we had one again at Crime Baptist Church. We didn't let those folks talk about nothing but Veterans Affairs because Veterans, that was the biggest scandal in the history of Philly ever going on. And now we don't won the case now, but we're still going to talk about the state of affairs of Veterans. We're going to talk about reparations, and we're going to talk about that Wilson Good sign. Those are the three primary things that the organizer, i.e. Point Man Sold Dark Ministry, is going to talk about. Now, anybody else who want to talk about any issue politically they want to talk about, you see, they have the right to do that. We're going to allow them to do that. But our focus is on those three issues there because we want to make sure that they let them know we're going to hold their butts accountable and we're giving them something they can do. You good. See? Good. And they got to get off this thing again. I can do it, but I'm not going to do it. We're not let that happen. That's a big price they have to pay if they go take that position.
Brother Ari, before we leave, give out any contacts or emails how people can reach you.
Hey, thank you, my brother. I want first of all give acknowledgement and appreciation for our national male and female co-chairs, Brother Cam Howard out of Chicago and Sister Marsha Ricky Jawanza out of Naptown, Indianapolis, Indiana. Those are our current co-chairs. They're doing a great job, and we are focused on what we need to do on the ground. You can contact and look at all the back stories about reparations on www.incobraonline.org. You can reach me and look at my stuff on Facebook by my name, Ari Moretta Zahn. And also on a page that I put up called Mainstreaming the Reparation Movement. Now, I understand that concept because that's exactly what we got to do. We got to mainstream this reparation movement. We cannot lie to keep it locked into to just the nationalist community, because there are more black folks than there are nationalists right now, you know, who declare themselves nationalists. You know, so we got to mainstream this reparation movement because Congress got to hear the voice of the people. And the only way we're going to do that is to make sure that Congress, we engage Congress, because we say that reparations is the crossroads solution to our human capital development and repair as a matter of public policy, you see? And in a reparations accord as a matter of public apology. So that's why I think I gave all the direct information I wanted. Oh, yeah, also, again, reinforce www.racism.org. So we say www.racism.org, www.incobraonline, and Mainstream the Reparations Movement on Facebook, Descendants of African Slaves in the United States on Facebook, my Facebook page, and get on Twitter because we need some communication going on Twitter. I mean the R word talked about on Twitter too from those who are down on the ground. And you can reach me at Twitter at Ari Moretta's on at twitter.com, I think that's how I go.
Before you leave us, Brother Ari, it's a call just popped on. I'm going to see whether you want to participate. Let's go to caller. What's your name? Where you calling from?
My name is Michael Hicks, calling from Louisville, Kentucky. I'm a viewer, and I wanted to hear your program this evening. I wanted to hear some of the representatives of the various reparations organizations who are on the ground and doing this everyday work. And I'm a listener and someone that seeks to be a learner, because I want some education on, and if I could even get, even if it's a thumbnail of just getting what the everyday work has been like in the meantime and between time.
Hey, thank you, my brother. You remind me to let everybody know about the 2019 NCOBRA convention in Detroit, Michigan in June. Now, you can find the registration forms, you can find the membership forms on www.ncobraonline.org. Free register. When you register, it's a free, your first year membership is free when you register for that conference. All right? So please, everybody, that's another thing what you can do in terms of how to make reparation happen. You got to join NCOBRA, right? You got to join that vanguard. You see, so again, go online to www.ncobraonline.org, pull down the membership form, and pull down your our convention registration form, and we'll see you there.
Thank you for the information.
Brother,
thank you, my brother, for calling. Really appreciate that.
Thanks for your call,
brother,
and call again.
Man, I got to get on the road, man. I'm in my car talking to y'all, man, on in a shopping center in front of Chase Bank. Stop right now for them.
We'll talk to you soon, brother.
Yeah, thanks.
And you know,
man,
I'll see
you,
I'll be
man.
Seeing you around.
Hey, love you too, brother. I know you will, man. I really appreciate you, brother. I respect you all. I acknowledge you all, and love you both. Thanks so much.
Peace.
All right, take it now.
Keep on doing that work. Bye now.
Brother Hicks from Louisville?
Yes.
Listen, thanks. This is your first time calling?
This would be my first time calling.
Yeah, thanks for calling, man.
This
would be. And you know, this is what we do here on Time for Awakening. It's things going on all over this country where our people are trying to move forward and are moving forward. We just try to showcase these people on the ground, people that are doing the work, so people can see that that our people are doing some things to move our people forward. You know, sometimes you'll be in a private conversation, you might be in the street, or you'll be in a barbershop or grocery store, and the television will show some story on there with some small fraction of our people are out of control. And then you'll hear the comments from other black people. Oh, boy, we ain't doing nothing. This is all we doing. But that's, you know, listen, you're intelligent enough to know that that's the narrative that they want to put out. It's plenty of our people doing things positive to move our people forward. I just think it's my responsibility on Time for Awakening to showcase these people and let people know that they can join organizations, that they can get involved, and that we should be involved. So, again, I want to thank you for your call, man.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm encouraged to see the debate go forward. As an individual speaking for myself, who doesn't rely as much on the mainstream media for my news or what I should be told are the most important, you know, issues of the day or what we need to be concerned about. My interest, my focus, my concern is on the collective condition of Black Americans in this country and the sorts of things that what is our justice claim, and you know, how can we best and most effectively get not only some answers, but you know, like get some tangibles from the most loyal cohort of the Democratic Party. So, you know, given that they have reliably had our votes for decades, it is not too much to ask for the relationship to be reciprocal.
Brother,
you're here.
Thank you for your contribution and look forward to talking to you again.
Yes, sir.
Peace.
Peace.
Richard, interesting conversation with Brother Irie, and you know that we'll see him around. And the struggle continues, man.
Definitely, definitely.
I want to.
It's unclear. I'm glad there's some things that are getting cleared up. So that's it's a great thing.
Again, before I leave, I want to give the lineup on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. African Perspectives with Brother Oshi. I know that Brother Oshi is out of the country right now, but Sister Marcy will be hosting his program. And she has a new program that will be airing on Friday afternoons from 1 to 2 after Brother Oshi's program. So African Perspectives with Brother Oshi from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. On Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. On Wednesday, Revive with Sister POC from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. On Thursday, Relationships with Joy and Troy from 7 p.m. To 8 p.m. on Time for Awakening Media. And then on Friday, Time for Awakening is back from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. A lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. Children, soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. Right now they seem to play such a small part of.
children. Soon it will be their turn to try and save the world. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. To save the children.